From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we bring you the latest from the World Health Organization, a press conference held Friday in Geneva with Dr. Peter K. Ben-Embark, food safety and zoonosis expert for the WHO.
Today we would like to discuss the zoonotic origin of this virus and how it relates to other similar events we have seen in the past and better understand how these events happen and the possible links to our food supply and the traditional food markets. SARS-CoV-2 belongs to a group of coronaviruses that have their ecological origin or natural environments in bat populations. And they once in a while jump over to humans through sometimes different other animal species and adapt to humans and cause disease in humans. We've seen that in the past with the first SARS virus back in 2003, where it also originated from an intermediate animal host. At that time, it was civet cats, as you perhaps remember. And these were farmed and sold as food and entered our food supply. And we also, in 2012, had the appearance of the MERS virus, another coronavirus, in the Middle East. And after some time, we made the link to close contact with camels in the region. And that's how people got MERS from contact with camels. And we have seen other similar events also with different bird flu influenza viruses, H5N1, H7N9, if you remember, and a few others, all were originating at that interface between animals and humans where we have close contact with animals. And Ebola Western a few years ago was another example of that linked to contact with pigs. So it's not unusual to have these events, but of course this one is totally unique in the scale and size of how it has impacted public health and our daily life in recent months. So a rather unique event in that respect, but the origin of it is not very unique, and we have seen several of these events. And as I said in the beginning, there are generated at this interface between animal and humans where we have close contact with animals. And that's typically in the process of raising or farming or hunting animals for food. So as part of our food supply. So they are not per se foodborne disease, a classical foodborne disease you get through consuming food, but they get to humans through our contact with animals while preparing or raising them for food. So if in a way a food-related disease, but not a foodborne disease. And this happen, of course, in farm environment, but also in markets environment where we handle and buy and sell live animals or animal products for food. And unfortunately, we have neglected traditional food markets over several decades, with more and more people moving to cities and cities growing all over the world. Traditional food markets have somehow got forgotten in the process and in our expansion. And they are often, therefore, overcrowded, in poor conditions, maintaining hygiene and safety, food safety in these environments, it's rather difficult. And therefore, it's not surprising that sometimes we also have these events happening in within markets. And therefore, it's critically important that following this event, that we pay more attention and give more attention and resources to improving our traditional food markets, because they play a huge role in our societies. They have it's a place providing fresh and affordable food for millions of people across the world. not only in developing countries, but also in developed, more developed part of the world. So it's also a setting that has a social importance. People gather there, mingles and meet their friends and relatives and neighbors. So it's a place that that play a role and is very important for us as societies, both in urban environments, but also of course in more rural settings. I think I will stop here and open up for questions.
Thank you very much, Peter. And of course, we're inviting for questions. Now I'm looking at the screen for raising your hands, please. This way we can identify who will be up. And I have three already. And I can ask Jean-Marc, please, let's start with Jeremy Lange, please, Radio France.
Can you hear me?
All good.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one. Maybe I missed something here, but I don't think you ever mentioned Wuhan so far. So this is what we're talking about. So considering what you just said, do you acknowledge that this the SARS-CoV came from Wuhan? I mean, how much confidence do we have now that the virus is coming from this particular food market? Is it 100%? Is it 99%? What can you say about that?
Nearly all of the ones who raised their hands have on. Let's hear.
Thank you, and very good question indeed. And what we know so far is that as we know that the first human cases were detected in and around Wuhan. And if you remember back in December, that at early January, when the first cases were detected and reported, these were severe cases. And a majority of them had contact with a wholesale market in Wuhan, either because they were working there or visiting that market often or using it as a source for food, as we just discussed. But also some of the earlier cases did not report any contact with that market. We also know that samples were taken in these markets afterwards and studies were conducted there, and the virus was samples. Some of the samples turned positive for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So the market must have played a role somehow, either as the source of the outbreak or an amplifying setting, meaning a setting where the virus was introduced by maybe some of the sick individuals at the beginning, and then because they were mingling and having close contact with other people in the market, the virus spread in that crowded environment. That's also another possibility. But we don't know for sure one or the other. We also don't know if it was the source of the outbreaks, meaning the first animals who had the virus perhaps were brought in that market, or whether it was an infected person who brought the virus in that market, and what role the markets had. That we don't know yet. It's also important to note that you remember at the beginning we had, as I said, only detected severe cases. And at that time, that was how we define COVID-19. It was a severe disease, respiratory diseases. But since then, we've learned a lot about the disease, and we know that the vast majority of cases are very mild or have no symptoms. So it would not be surprising that at that time, there was also a number of very mild cases that were undetected, because we didn't even know that there were mild cases at that time. So that could explain how some of the people who had no link with the market could have been infected. They could have been infected through some of these mild undetected cases. So the picture in itself is not surprising with the knowledge we have today. But again, we don't really know what happened exactly at the start of the outbreaks. And that's why we still have a lot of unknown on this.
Thank you very much. And we'll move on to Gunilla Fanov. Gunilla, please.
Thank you. I'm a Swedish journalist, Svenska Dagbladet. Thanks for taking my question. I have a follow-up. You said it's likely to that it came from the Wuhan market. What animal do you think it came from? And do you think there should be a global ban on wildlife markets? The Chinese ambassador told us the other day that there has been a ban now, or there is discussions about a ban. But how credible is this, and how could it be controlled? If there is a ban, how can it be controlled? So obviously, three questions in one. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Ranking. Yes, we don't know if the market is the source, a likely source, or where it's somewhere else. But the market played a role in the event, that's clear. But what role, we don't know, whether it was the source or an amplifying setting or just a coincidence that some cases were detected in and around that market. But usually, as I said in the beginning, these diseases have a link to animals and are typically jumping between species, and that's how they end up in adapting to humans. What species, animal species, might be involved in this case, we still don't know. There have been a number of studies already looking at different animal species' susceptibility to the virus to see if these animals could be infected with the virus and whether they could transmit the virus, because that would give us some clues about which animal could be the source of or could be involved in the start of this event. It's also important to understand which of the animal species we are in daily contact with, whether our pets or our farmed animals, could be susceptible to the virus, because we don't want to create another new reservoir in the in animals that could later on continue to create infections in humans. So it's important in many ways to understand which and what animal species are susceptible for the virus. So far, the studies conducted have shown that felines, including cats and also tigers, you perhaps have heard about the event in the zoo in New York. Cats and these felines are susceptible to the virus. Studies with cats have shown that cats can also transmit the disease to other cats. So it's this is a group of animals that is interesting to look at, because they are susceptible to the virus. Ferrets have also been shown to be susceptible to the virus. Dogs to some extent, but not as efficiently. And other species, like domestic species like pigs and poultry, chicken and turkey and the like, do not seem to be susceptible to the disease, which is in fact good news, because we are producing and raising this animal on a very large scale globally. But beyond that, there is still need to look at other species, both wild and farmed, in particular species that are traditionally used and brought to these markets, and try to isolate that that source, particularly to avoid having a repeat of the event later on in weeks or months or years, if we don't understand, identify, and manage that animal source. I'm not sure if I have answered all your questions. Otherwise, please remind me of the last one.
I think we're pretty good. If we missed something at the end, we'll come back. But we have a last list of questions. And we, of course, have a short hard stop because we need to go into the UN presser. So we're moving on with questions. The next on my list is John Saracostas. John, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Peter. I was wondering, when did you get the first live samples, WHO, IOE, and FAO, from what was at the time the epicenter, which is basically the Wuhan area? And I think there was a lot of research there on bats from caves around the Wuhan area, where I think the genetic sequence showed a 96.2% match. I've got a specific question. Is it possible from a contaminated bat that the lice from the bat could contaminate?
First of all, we don't receive live samples here in WHO. We don't have labs in WHO, even though that has been portrayed in many dramatic movies over the years. Unfortunately, we don't have that an exciting life in our offices, but we facilitate the sharing of viruses between labs across the world and the sharing of DNA sequences through open global databases. So researchers across the world can study and compare and work on these sequences and share their experiences and their analysis. And that's how we advance globally our knowledge of these viruses. So the first sequence of the virus, as you remember, were shared very quickly in January. Remember that within a couple of weeks, we went from a situation where we had a new disease, unknown disease, to a situation where we had identified the disease. It was a new coronaviruses. We had done a sequence, a total sequence of the genetic makeup of the virus. We had shared these sequences with the world and developed test kits and tests for this virus. So incredible speed this time with a totally unknown virus just a couple of weeks before that. And that would have been impossible just a few decades or a few years ago. We have now the tools and the techniques and the collaboration at the international level to achieve that speed. And it's really a remarkable achievement that we've achieved globally on this. With regards to the bat question, other coronaviruses that are closely related to our SARS-CoV-2 virus, the COVID-19 virus, have been isolated from bats, and therefore, over the years, in fact, and therefore, there is a global consensus that our virus is also originating from bat population at some point in the past. The different strains that are known and where sequences are available around the world in these open global databases show a relation and closeness with SARS-CoV-2, but none are that close to be able or to help in identifying the exact origin. Close means they belong to a larger group. The closest one we have to our virus is apparently a strain of coronaviruses isolated from a bat in southern China a few years ago. The original SARS-CoV virus from 2003 is a little bit less related, but still closely related, while the MERS coronavirus from the Middle East from starting 2012 is also closely related, but even further away in the genetic tree. So they are all somehow related, but they are not. They still have distance between them, and that reflects the huge diversity of these viruses in nature and the difficulty to exactly link them up, so to speak, at this stage.
Thank you. I think one of the questions from before, from Gunilla, we haven't quite followed yet, and which is also interesting in the whole context, is what about the markets? Gunilla asked specifically about the ban of the markets, but maybe we can go a bit into the hygiene and recommendations for the markets.
Thank you. Just before that, Christian, I forgot to answer the last question of the previous journalist on the possibility of parasite and lice on the bats to transmit the virus. Again, that will be looking into a totally different species and whether that species will be able to transmit the virus. And to our knowledge, other parasites, and for example, also there have been discussion about mosquitoes and whether other animals could transmit the virus, and that's not the case. These viruses have very specific affinities to certain animal species, and again, through their ability to attach and infect to specific cells of different species, they can or cannot at all invade and infect a particular animal species. So it's not like they can invade whatever they touch or move into. So there are always very specific pattern and niche for these viruses. With regards to the markets, yes, as I said, they are some of them are unfortunately across the world have been left in neglected for years, poorly regulated and poorly managed, and therefore it's high time that we develop better regulations, better management structure for these markets. Some of them, as we all know, would not be able to be easily fixed because the infrastructure or the conditions are not would not allow for that, and will be much easier to close them down and rebuild a new market there or elsewhere. But the vast majority can be fixed, can be better organized, because it's often a question of waste management. It's the question of people movement and goods movement. It's the question of separating live animals from animal products and from other fresh and cooked products. It's a question of separating fresh fruits and vegetables from meat products or live animals. It's a question of separating the public from the live animals and the people vending and slaughtering these animals. So it's more about management and regulations and inspections and cleaning and disinfections than anything else. And therefore they can be fixed, and we have done that in different projects. We have shown together with other colleagues in and partners, both in FAO and OIE and other international partners, that this can be done. And it's not a question of closing all these markets or just letting them unmanaged. It's about taking care of them and managing them and regulating them.
Let's not forget, after all, these are the livelihoods for millions and millions of people around the globe. And of course, the source of market products all around the world. Yeah, thank you, Peter. We're moving on to AFP on my next list, Robin Mia.
Yes, good morning. Hello there. What do you need to do to find out what role the market played and what the intermediate animal host might have been? Is it necessary to go there? And if so, the sooner the better?
Thank you for this question. These studies into the source of these new emerging viruses is often a complicated process. We have done that in the past a few years ago. You remember with the MERS viruses that emerged in 2012. For the first months and the first almost first year, everybody was looking for an animal source or for the source of where people were getting infected. They were getting infected on a regular basis in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, in the Emirates, and other places. They were also exported to many other countries in the world. So everybody was looking for the source, and it took about almost a year before we made the link to camels. And that was a combination of traditional studies, epidemiological studies, and also a little bit of luck. At that time, we had a call from Qatar one day saying, look, we have two human cases linked to a farm. We think that there is something on that farm. Let's have a look at it. And we went there and found and made the link with camels, and that was confirmed later on by other studies in other countries in the regions. So it's often a question of doing this groundwork in terms of epidemiological studies, interviews of early patients, interviews of people who have been around these early patients, either family members or people working with them, or where they have moved and worked and so on, what markets they've been, whether farmers or hunters have been involved and so on. So it's about interviewing a lot of people, about searching for clues, with the aim of narrowing down both the geographic and time environments where we would believe or think that the event started, because there is no point going to the first obvious place, let's say the wholesale market in Wuhan or or wherever you identify your first cases and start looking for everything and start testing for everything that is moving in that area, because chance that you will miss totally is quite big. And these, when you start sampling and testing a lot of animals, for example, it's a timely and resource demanding effort, and you don't want that unless you have a pretty good understanding that the source is where you are looking at, and you are just trying to identify which of the animal in that region is. So all these preliminary studies and interviews and collection of data and so on will help pinpoint both in time and in a geographic term where to look for the source. And it could be, again, in this case, it could be again around the markets in Wuhan, but it could be also outside or further out. And therefore, there is no point jumping and starting to test animals all over the place before having done this groundwork. of course, it's good to base these studies on what has been done already, understand what has been done, what data have been collected, and also learning from past experiences in other similar events around the world, again, from the MERS studies in the Middle East, from the Ebola restant studies in the Philippines about 10, 12 years ago, the first investigation around the SARS origin in 2003, some of the bird flu investigations over the years, some of the Ebola studies done in several places in Africa. So we have a lot of good experience around the world that we can drag on, both in terms of understanding the dynamic of these viruses and the dynamic of movements of animals as well, and also how people react when you interview them. Sometimes they are scared. Sometimes you need to use a particular approach to get the best out of them. So it's not that easy, and it's time consuming. It's not too late. It's as I said, for the MERS virus, it took about a year before we found the source. so it's never too late, and but it's important that we try to find the source and understand what happened at the start of the event, to avoid a repeat of this event and to avoid another spillover event in the coming years with other different viruses.
Thank you, Peter. I see we have roughly 5 more minutes left, and I have a lot of questions or hands up still. Could I ask you, because we won't get through all of them, to quick question, and I'm asking Peter to be short and quick in the answers so we get through most of the questions at least. My next on the list is Christiane Ulrich. Christiane, please.
Hello, Christiana, German Press Agency. My question is technical. Is it important to have the live virus for research, or is it enough to have the sequence? Because we are not sure whether China has shared live virus, but I'm also not sure whether that is really necessary. And I would like to know whether WHO has to rely on all of this material, all the studies from China, or do you have your own investigators who are doing their own research? Thank you.
It's critical these days to have the sequence of viruses, because that's how we can understand the makeup and the evolution of the virus. So it's always good to have the live virus, because you can then do the sequencing, but the sequencing is also the most useful part of it. What is important, what will be of great help, is if we could get hold of the virus before it adapted to humans, before the version we have now, because then we will better understand how it adapted to humans, how it evolved, and what are the changes in the makeup of the virus that most likely did this adaptation, because now we can see different structure of the virus. We can see mutations sometimes, but we don't really understand which mutation is critical, which one is less critical, because they are mutating all the time. And in 99% of the cases, these mutations mean nothing. And we have to understand the critical ones. In terms of investigations, China has most probably and most likely all the expertise needed to do these investigations.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.